Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Comedy at the Carlson Cast. If you want to subscribe, visit carlsoncast.com. Don't be a jerk. Today is episode number 97, and our guest is Derek Gaines. Today's episode is brought to you by our good friends at Sapori Cafe and Catering, Rochester's favorite place for lunch. Located inside the Powers Building atrium, you can have them just go grab lunch or have them host your very special event at Sapori Rochester. Also, Three Heads Brewing, makers of Rochester's favorite beer, The Kind. Remember, folks, do good things and always be kind. ThreeHeadsBrewing.com, always drink responsibly. And now, kick it over to me because I rule.
Do you? Do you, though?
In comparison to you.
Do you, though?
Ross isn't here, so I had to go do all of his job.
Yeah, yeah.
Notice there was Ross. A lot less giggling.
Yeah. He's off having breakfast with George Takei in Hawaii right
or
now.
Or something. Yeah. Somebody from Star Trek. He's literally at a Star Trek nerd thing in Hawaii right now.
NerdCon.
But Hawaii. Who's going to let us know who died this week?
I don't know.
Whatever. Either way, we have a good show lined up for you. Brian and I do, apart from the Brian part. We do have a good show lined up. Derek Gaines is going to be here as our guest. And interesting career. Been around for a little while, but he is starting to soar. This is a guy who is definitely on the uptick of the roller coaster.
Kind of blowing up, as they say in the business.
Yeah, you're going to know him very, very soon. Yeah. And you might want to get in on coming to see him now. Tickets are available, 585-4-COMEDY. Also, the text line is open, so if you're watching the interview and you're just hanging out and you're watching us live right now on Facebook or YouTube, feel free to text us questions. Phone number's right there under me, 585-484-0265. So I need to start the show off today with a thank you to a dear friend of mine before we talk about the important stuff.
You're welcome.
Didn't you just immediately disqualify yourself when I said a good friend of mine?
A dear friend, actually.
Yeah. My pal Zach over the zone hooked me up with these WWE tickets, Brian. Oh.
Nice.
I got a pair right here.
Nice.
Well, they're not like airplanes, so I don't need to have two.
Mm-hmm.
So that means I have one extra ticket for somebody, Brian. Mm. I wonder who that somebody might be.
Cameron.
Last time I got you a wrestling ticket, dude, it did not work out in my favor.
You wouldn't bring that up.
So I'm thinking if you are a fan of the Carlson Cast and you want to go watch WWE with me,
why would anyone want to do that?
Because I don't want to give you the ticket.
Why would I? What day is it?
I'm not even bothering telling
you. Well, you got to tell the people. You got to tell the people.
October 20th.
I'm in town.
Shoeless Joe wants in. Yeah. Shoeless Joe, go sit on the couch. Hit Shoeless Joe. Here's some entertainment.
No, literally hit Shoeless Joe.
Yeah. This is my go for Shoeless Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Hey. He's as you could tell by those awesome glove sleeve things, he is a big Jay fan, if you couldn't tell.
Yeah, it's like a bad mix between like Jay and Dice.
It's a little bit.
Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Exactly. It's actually a pretty good mix, just void of all the talent.
And appeal.
Yeah. So, Joe, why do you want to be? Why should I take you over Brian or Cam to go see wrestling with me?
Because I've never seen a wrestling show, and I've always wanted to, and it might open up doors so we can have more personal conversations about things you love.
I just realized as he came in, he looks like.
I look like a failed wrestler.
What's his face from NXT that doesn't wear shoes?
Oh, Riddle?
Yeah, he looks like Matt Riddle.
Oh.
Matt Riddle's cousin.
Cam, why should I take you?
Because, Vinny, you've always been a dear friend of mine. And, you know, we love wrestling, and I want to show you a good time that we weren't able to have in Chicago.
That does not sound appealing.
Yeah. Thank you. And by the way, thank you for doing a great job of switching while I'm trying to fix the cameras. Good job, Cam. Brian, why should I take you?
I don't care.
Brian wins.
Actually, not even a little bit. I'll tell you what.
I think you should take Joe.
You think I should take Shoeless Joe?
Yeah, he'll be in a warm place for a couple hours. It'll be nice for him. be nice for him.
There's heat there, right?
He'll be in a climate control building for
an hour. Hold on. If you're watching this and you want to go see wrestling with me, send us an email, carlsoncast@gmail.com, and you tell me why you think you should go see wrestling with me, and I'll give you this extra ticket if you could beat Shoeless Joe needing a warm place to abide for a few hours.
Is it a house show? Or
house show, baby. House Those show. Are the fun ones.
Those are the fun ones, yeah.
Those
definitely.
Are the fun ones. Joe, you don't know what that is. Shut up. All right. Let's talk about something important.
Okay.
Thank you, Zach, for those tickets. We'll make good use of them. Shoeless Joe will not get frostbitten. Or a fan will have the time of their lives entertaining me. Okay. Hit my computer, Cam.
Oh, I hope someone truly terrible sends you a great email.
1 week from today, baby.
New comic night.
New comic night, Friday, October 11th. It is a free show. It's like going to New York City and just going into one of the clubs and hanging out at the bar. You're going to see a ton of different acts, some amazingly fun people. And if you want to perform, we've got 20 spots open. We are doing it by a random drawing. Everybody's name goes into a bucket. At 7:30, I start picking names. And there we go. Mm-hmm. We're off to the races. It's a pretty good time. So it's free. What do you got to lose?
Yeah.
Grab a friend. Come and have a beer or two. And come laugh at some comics. And you won't regret it. I'll be your host. Maybe you'll regret it a little bit. But I will be your host. And it'll be fun. So we're going to have Brian tell you about our upcoming shows. And we're going to be back with our guest this morning, Derek Gaines. So stay tuned. Rochester. We'll be right back.
Hey, everybody, got all the really cool shows coming up here at Comedy Carlson. We've added some new names, so pay attention.
Great sentence.
There we go. We have Derek Gaines this very weekend. Still tickets available. We have Marianne Sirk and Todd Youngman on October 4th and 5th.
That's also this weekend.
Yep. Mike Vecchione, October 10th through the 12th. And one night only on October 13th, the Hodge Twins.
Did computers do that? Or
I don't know. And Shasir Zameda on October 17th through the 19th. Pretty excited about that one. Dan Viola, October 18th.
Bring number two pencils.
Yes. And October 25th and 26th, Michelle Wolf. November 1st and 2nd, Rocky Laporte. And Bobby Slayton on November 7th through the 9th. And Mike Racine, one night only, on November 8th. We have the one and only Gary Goldman on November 14th through the 16th. And November 21st to the 23rd, we have Vicky Barbalak.
Ah!
And as is tradition, Dr. Dirty on Thanksgiving Eve, November 27th. And friend of the show, Chris Allen, November 29th and 30th. We have Chris Frangiola on December 5th through the 7th. Pete Corelli on December 12th through the 14th. And one of our favorites, April Macy, December 19th through the 21st. And my mortal enemy, Rich Voss, December 26th through the 28th.
But he looks great in the hats.
He does look good in the hats. Tim Meadows, January 2nd through the 4th. And if you need tickets, go to carlsoncomedy.com or call 585-4-COMEDY, and we will all see you at the shows.
Below average job today, Brian.
Thank you. It's what I aim for.
Well, you nailed it.
Got it.
Thank you for being awesome and watching another episode of the Carlson Cast. Don't forget we're streaming live on Facebook and YouTube every Friday morning. You could also follow us on social media on Twitter and Instagram at Carlson Cast. You can listen anytime on iTunes, Google Play, and we're now available on Spotify. You should also check out an amazing app called Laughable. And on the Laughable app, you can connect to your favorite comedians in a way you never thought you could before. Download it in the App Store and visit carlsoncast.com for information on more shows. And don't be a jerk. Rate and review. Hey folks, joining us in the studio is a man who already we're getting comments on the feed for this video that people are describing as funny as hell. And here's another. You got a review already. Saw him last night. Hilarious.
Word.
That's what they're saying about you.
This is good. This
Derek
is,
Gaines.
The reviews are in.
The reviews are already in. This is good. How's everyone?
Never been better, man.
This is good. I'm having fun. Rochester is one snazzy town.
I don't know if I'd use the word snazzy.
Snazzy mentally.
Mentally, yes.
There you go. Mentally snazzy. Very savvy, quick.
Tell it to my snazzy. Camera guy.
Internally snazzy.
Internally snazzy, right?
Yeah.
I feel like that's like one of those, like not really a compliment. That's kind of like, oh, you look snazzy.
Like, not like kind of a, what do they call it, a backhanded compliment?
Snazzy is, no, yeah. Snazzy has always been,
it's a good,
to be snazzy, okay, thing. I'll say savvy. Very savvy-minded, okay. Comedy town.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah. That I'll agree with. We have some pretty smart cookies that watch comedy.
Yeah. And those parts. Like, I could tell, because some of the takes I was taking last night, mm-hmm. very risky takes, but y'all did Rochester roll with me. I was like, oh, look at that.
There's a huge difference between like playing different parts of the country, yeah. isn't there?
Some cities are comically trained, and in other cities you really got to fight for those, you know, for those laughs. Some people can't get in your headspace, but I find it in Rochester, we get on the same page really quick.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, this is a good comedy city. Low ceilings at the club.
Yeah.
You know, it's dark, and it's just packed. It's on the floor. It's just, it's like a real good New York vibe.
Yeah.
And I go, and when you do it, you still go, yeah, we're still in New York. May not be New York City, but we're still in.
Well, you've heard how they describe the New York State, right? Where they say it's like all the cities, and then it's Alabama in between.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
The things I saw on that train coming up, man. All the swampy water. I didn't know there could be green water. The green, the mossy water you can't see through.
Yeah.
That the gators stay in. Yeah. I didn't even know that you had like moss.
Oh,
marsh.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but no, it's,
we export more of that than film now. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Just in bottles.
Yeah, we export swamp water more than we do film. You know, Kodak
crazy.
Isn't
I'm
doing
like,
too well.
Wow, New York is really gutta out here. I saw Kermit the Frog playing a banjo on a log. It's all good. It was a very nice time.
One day we'll find it.
That
rainbow,
absolutely, on a stump or with a banjo in New York. I didn't think on the train. I saw it.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
I was on my way to Syracuse.
I was down south this last weekend, and I got to tell you, man, I felt exactly what you were kind of talking about. It's like you could tell a good comedy crowd, people who really want to see comedy versus people who are like, oh, a comedy show.
Yeah, that. Like, yeah. It was, to be honest, I was in Huntsville, Alabama last week.
Oh, boy.
And it really went well. Shockingly went well. I was like, this is crazy. Because I was unapologetically black. Like, I went in.
I was unapologetically black.
I was like,
we're still making people apologize for that.
The only thing I did, Vinny, to be honest with you, when we found out we was going to Alabama, we was in Atlanta. I rented a white minivan to keep the cops off my ass. And then when we crossed Alabama state lines, I laid the fuck down. And then we got there. I like laid down in the back seat. I was like, damn, nope, I'm not even taking a chance. I just lay down, put the coat over my face. And just wait till we get to the club and then just go through the back.
You decided you would prefer to ride as contraband.
Yeah, man. That's so funny.
You were smuggled into Alabama?
They smuggle me in.
Oh, God.
Cartel. Huh? I was like, man, I don't want to get pulled over or cuffed by these show-off ass down south cops. I was like, let me just get there.
So comedian, eh?
You know? That shit. Tell me a joke while I cuff you and put you in a ditch. Like, I'm good.
You think you're funny, eh?
Yeah, that shit. So I'm like, nah. So, no. They smuggled me in.
Not funny at all.
For smuggling me in.
I love it. So I want to know you a little bit more, Derek.
What's
because
up, man?
I've been trying to do some research about you and learn a little bit about you. And I've seen basically the same information everywhere. And I feel like there's probably a lot more to you than that.
Okay.
I saw you grew up in California and then you moved to Philly.
I was born in Cali, grew up in Philly.
Okay.
So, born on an Air Force base in Central California somewhere. Salina Valley, I think. One of them Air Force bases. And then, product of a good divorce. I talked about that on the other show. My mom and pop split, but they went in really good directions.
So was your mom in the Air Force or was your dad?
Both of them.
Oh, really?
I'm one of them kids.
Okay.
I was conceived in the Air Force.
Was it Vandenberg? Somewhere out that way?
I don't want to say Andrews. I think Andrews was in D.C. One of them, it was an Air Force base. I was born in an Air Force hospital, and that's all I remember.
You remember that?
Yeah.
It's pretty impressive.
Well, not.
Okay.
Am I some mutant kid? No, I just knew that was it. And then my parents split, and I stayed with my dad for a little while. And then my mom was like, come on home. And that was Philly.
Philly was home.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, West Coast kid, go to Philly.
Yeah.
You're growing up there. I mean, culturally, did you feel comfortable?
Absolutely.
Like, I went from West Coast to East Coast as a kid, too.
I adapted to the East. And the East Coast attitude, Philly, Jersey, New York.
Okay.
To get those three mean-ass aired, the air is mean in Philly. And then Jersey is just a bunch of dickholes. And then you get to New York and you understand, oh, I fit right in.
Right.
Because I've been in Philly. I've been in Jersey training with this comedy. So now this very fast-paced, mean city, oh, I get it all. So when I go back to Cali, I'll be like, this is too slow. I kind of like the East Coast. So yeah, okay. I think I'm cultured in the East.
Okay.
Just so, dipped in that East Coast, yeah.
You wanted to be a musician, I understand.
I went to jazz college. Yeah, I went to jazz college as a drummer. And one of the reasons I went to school for drumming because my SAT scores were so terribly low. I found out I couldn't take tests under pressure, but I was really good at playing music. So mm-hmm. I got in on a partial scholarship. I was playing in all kinds of bands. Couldn't read a lick, so it was a very Nick Cannon drum line set up.
Yeah.
And so I couldn't read shit, but I could play. So yeah. That was supposed to get me through. And then one of the professors called me on my shit and was like, oh, you can't read. Sit in the corner and learn how to read. And I couldn't read music for shit. So I wound up dropping out because my piano scores were so low. Because I had a piano class that I could not comprehend. And then that summer, because everybody in school told me I was funny. And I was like, all right, whatever. And then somebody was like, you should go to this open mic on Second and Front, because it was in Philadelphia.
Right.
Second and Front, it was the Laugh House. That's where Kev Hart came from.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So when they told me that, the day after I turned 19, got on stage, and never looked back. I was like, this makes so much sense. Because I had like an epiphany at a concert one time.
Yeah.
I was playing solo.
Mm-hmm.
They had a spotlight on me. I was carrying the fuck on. I was playing beats. And everybody in the crowd was going nuts. And then when I was done, the spotlight went back to the saxophone player.
And you thought, I don't like that.
I was like, wait a minute, I'm behind some dude's ass? Playing? And then I'm just a guy in the background? Nah. I need to do something else. And it wasn't music. I was like, well, they say I'm funny. I should probably talk on a mic. Mm-hmm. And it all worked out. And plus, I was already watching a lot of stand-up. Because HBO, right. I had HBO. I had all that shit coming up. So
nice.
The Chappelle's and the Chris Rock's and the Kings of Comedy came out. I was like hooked to it. I was like really digging it at 14, 15. But didn't understand how to do it.
Right.
So I was just at school doing what they did. And people was like, oh, you got a way about you. You know, you have a way of being funny. You can find the
funny.
So
you were just influenced by...
I was influenced by comedy at a young age. I was like, because even my mom used to tell me when I was like 3, she used to tell me, she was like, I'd watch Looney Tunes.
Uh-huh.
And I try to mimic Bugs Bunny or Daffy, and then I
so you put on dresses and try to
not even that.
The other bunnies.
Oh, see that? No, it wasn't even the drag part. That's so funny. like I just liked how crafty Bugs was when he outsmarted Elmer.
Oh yeah, Elmer
so
was a dumb
sarcastic,
shit.
Sarcastic bite the carrot. Like biting a carrot then is like smoking a cigarette now, or like saying some funny shit and taking a puff.
Yeah,
that was Bugs' whole swag.
Yeah.
So I try to take that swag and perform it in front of my mom. My mom would laugh. And when she stopped laughing, I go back to the cartoons, mimic something else, come back. So I was stealing jokes. I was stealing material when I was a young man. So it was always I was always hammy.
I was painting black holes on walls. I was and really imitating.
All that goofy shit. I love Roger Rabbit and all that. It was just like I kind of dug being a cartoon.
Right.
So that translated as, you know, being a funny person later in life.
Well. So, it doesn't always, but I think it's kind of interesting that you were into music because a lot of comedians I meet always like secretly wish they were musicians.
Yeah.
And a lot of musicians I meet always secretly
want to be comedians.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing, man. I'm glad I got into it early. I could really listen to some music. Like I can hear rhythm. I can really hear beats. Mm-hmm. So playing percussion to jazz wasn't that hard for me.
Yeah.
Dun, 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 dun,
and I think part of it is just like once you get used to being on stage in one or the other, you're like, how can I be on stage more?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, yeah, it was just, like, I want more of that.
I didn't want to play music. I kind of wanted to talk.
Mm-hmm. Does understanding like how rhythm and beat work help you put your jokes together?
Absolutely. Comedy is rhythmic language.
It is.
So
it is.
If you think of a premise bridge punchline, you know, a premise is the part, you know, is what you get into. The bridge sends you to the punchline. So if I do it right, if I say all the words right and well-timed, and
there's a rhythm.
The punchline right on the time, it's a rhythm. And people laughing is basically people nodding to a beat, in a sense.
Yeah.
If you nod to a beat, that's music. But if you laughing at this joke I just said, you feeling the joke. So it's like, because I dropped the punchline, dot dot dot, bam, right there. Oh, oh, oh. So it's rhythmic language.
Right.
Oh,
right.
Oh, so. And people remember, and motherfuckers are singing songs that I did, the joke, all that bullshit. Yeah. So it's, yeah, rhythmic language. I've always gone, comedy should be rhythmic. Yeah. I don't know, you know, you got your deadpan comics, but it's a rhythm.
It even to that, absolutely there is.
But you got your upbeat comics. I'm a Def Jam guy, so I was like, "Oh, I see what they're doing. I see how they get them. I see how they get them going. I see the pauses they got to take. I see where they go or how they say certain shit." Like when I used to watch Martin host Def Jam, it was magical because Martin had a timing that you go, "What the fuck?" Like, I've seen people get up and run around because something's so funny. I'm like, "How the fuck do you get that?"
So as a kid,
I was like, "How do you do that?"
That's a weird cultural thing, I think, where people just get up and run around the room.
That's black shit. That's
a little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit.
That's black shit.
He wasn't going to say it.
Let's not get it. I'll say it. That's black shit. And I love black shit. I loved how black people laughed. Yeah. I was like, and I'm black too. So shit, seeing that going, I could be the guy on stage to make people run around. Especially when you just get a good one.
Right.
To get a good snap in on somebody and everybody gets it. Oh my God! And then people go run, high five, and shit like that. I always wanted to be able.
It's amazing how volatile comedy could be.
Yeah,
it just boom, like the whole crowd.
You could pop. Yeah. I've seen those kind of explosions when the infamous Bernie Mac set when he had when he had his face on his jeans.
Oh God! Yeah.
The story about that: the guy before him bombed so bad that the crowd was uncontrollable, and Martin was like, "I can't even win these niggas back." So I'm going to just bring Bernie Mac out and just see what happens. I'm going to send him to the wolves. And Bernie Mac came out. I'm not afraid of you, motherfucker. Like, that whole thing, to be able to do that and then flip the crowd. And then by the third time he said it, the crowd was throwing sneakers, collard greens falling out of people's mouths for shit.
Jesus Christ.
I'm like, oh, all right. I can get people to spit out collard greens and shit. I want to do that. So, yeah, it was that kind of thing.
I've seen that set. I didn't know that the context of it, though. The guy before him bombed
so goddamn bad, the crowd just gave up on the show.
Yeah.
So Martin couldn't even win him. So Mac had to go out there, and in Mac's head, he was like, this is my career. It's just like, it's my way back. This is my second time on this show.
Hey, Shoeless Joe. Go find the clip for that. We're going to post that on the Facebook page for everybody later, for those of you who've never seen it. We're going to make sure we have it.
The colorful outfit he got, his face on his jeans. That's the one.
And
that's,
so check back to the Facebook page. And people will have it.
What I found, I haven't done a lot in front of black crowds, but it's like either you got them or you don't.
Or you don't.
And more often than not, you do. I usually had a really good time, but the times you don't, get them.
And that's Philly taught me. Philadelphia taught me that. The Laugh House taught me that. You have to win black people different. White people will sit there and listen for a second because, you know,
they'll give you a second.
They live a life that they can understand. But black people, prove it to me right now, nigga. I'm dressed. Yeah. I got my girl with me. She annoying. I had to pay for drinks and food. Nigga, you better make sure that you worth these chicken tenders, motherfucker. Because if you not, I'm gonna boo you off.
But if you can prove that, if you can prove that in 10 seconds, best crowds ever.
Best crowds ever.
Yeah.
And that was Philly.
Yeah,
that
no
was
pressure the there, right? No pressure at all.
And that was the open mic scene. Yeah. That was my open mic. Because open mics in Philly, all the college kids used to come because it was only $5 to get in. So now you got Temple kids, Drexel kids, Southwest, West, and North in there. Wasn't no other comics to play to. You got to play to a real crowd with your little goofy 5 minutes that you just wrote because you're a new jack. So you want to get booed and get clowned by everybody, or you want to try to kill and then be the guy? So it was always that. It was wrestling. Yeah. It was wrestling in Philly. Yeah. You got to get on stage, swagged out already. Yeah. Your swag got to let them know, don't tease me yet. Then your material got to hit because they'll start snapping on you. And they knew where the light was. Hey, light, fuck off stage, bro. You suck.
They pointed the light for you.
They like,
oh my God.
Yo, get this dude out of here. The light.
That's horrifying. That is horrifying.
They knew where the light was? Oh, it was a wrap.
For those of you who are watchers that don't know what the light is, in the comedy business, basically, when you have a minute or two left in your set, they'll flash a light at you. Or if you're doing so abysmal that the club just wants you off of the stage, they'll flash a light at you.
Let me tell you something right now, because when it's silent in the room and then you see some red flash, everybody looks at the red. Oh, that means get the fuck off. Yeah, you. Off. Yeah. You're terrible. So it was a lot of seeing that. It happened to me quite a few times. Yeah. I've had pennies thrown at me from balconies.
What was the Eagles game?
No, pennies. Camden.
No, those are batteries.
Camden, New Jersey, was in a show, and they chucked pennies at me from the balcony. It was
crazy.
Pennies.
I wasn't even worth a quarter, a nickel. Pennies. I was like, I couldn't even get a quarter. Y'all couldn't even throw four quarters. At least I can leave with a dollar, motherfucker. Like, a penny?
Pennies add up. Pennies add up.
Time.
And who has pennies?
Right! Just motherfuckers throwing loose change at me.
They
I'm
brought,
like, this is, they really
no, they,
like
they brought pennies to the show with the intent to possibly throw them at somebody.
Me. Like, they were snapping them at me. Like, they would come off the thumb. Get up higher. So it come down with a little heat on it.
People really glorify the comedy business and really think that it's where it's at. But it is a nightmare.
That come up is crazy. Sleeping in cars, going to these rinky-dink fucking little rooms in East Piscop, bop, 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 whatever, trying to get your little set off. It's absolutely asinine to want to be a comic. Absolutely, until you make it. Because the part before you make it, Jesus Christ. Yeah, I used to, because I used to be a janitor on the Garden State Parkway. This is a true story. Mm-hmm. And I used to call out all the time to do shows in Connecticut and all that. So just like I had a shitty job. So the shitty job made me push to go do more comedy.
Sure.
Because I didn't have a good job. I mean, it paid well, but I was cleaning up cop shit. So it was like, you know,
yeah,
pretty bad. So comedy pushed me to just keep going, man. You don't want to smell shit the rest of your life, right?
Nope.
And I'm like, yeah. So that's what kept me. Yeah, so all these tough crowds is nothing compared to a toilet full of state trooper shit.
Well, you talk about making it, and rarefied air, man, for you, because you're on two sitcoms. Congratulations on that.
Yeah, that happened. That worked out.
Oh, really? It worked out a little bit? Huh. Interesting.
Worked out.
Network television?
Network. Bad network.
Yeah. Yeah, not like
residual checks.
Yeah.
TBS,
Actors Guild,
The Last OG with Tracy Morgan and Will and Grace, and that's NBC. Wow, man!
I got that off a failed pilot I tried to do, because they was like, "You're funny." The show didn't work, but we'll put you on Will and Grace because that's on. I was like, "All right."
You were probably like, "Oh, that's fine."
Yeah, I don't want to.
What a consolation prize!
I get three episodes, so it was like it's pretty crazy to be a recurrent on that show to get three. And, you know, in the stature that I am, I'm still unapologetically black on the show. So it's great.
Yeah.
It's a really good time, man. Because I believed in something. You know, I just didn't want to clean toilets anymore.
So let's talk about this. You ended up with a holding deal, or you just, they gave you a pilot?
This is what happened. I did a tape
right.
that my late manager told me to do. And
R.I.P.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I did a tape, and he was like, just read for this part, man. I'm like, I don't fucking do this acting shit. I'm trying to be a comic. I was in Manhattan running around. He's like, just read it. Just send it in. So I did a tape, sent it in, wound up getting a pilot. Pilot didn't go. But the guys who were writing the pilot wrote Will and Grace.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So they was like, you funny, man. You tested higher than anybody. So we're not just going to let you go. We're going to throw you in Will and Grace. So I was like, wow.
So
and that was crazy.
When you hear that you tested high,
yeah,
that's like, that means, that's a rubber stamp on you.
Yeah.
Because that's all that they want in casting is just somebody that tests high.
Yeah, because I was going up against Jane Lynch. Everybody loved that chick. So it's like,
that's true.
Yeah, so I was like, dang, to be up against Jane Lynch.
What part were you and Jane Lynch both going up against each other for?
The name of the show was called Relatively Happy. And it was about this brother's sister that had, I guess, issues, but they were like, were tight knit, and we was the black neighbors. Me and the girl that I was, we were the black neighbors that were the friends of them.
Okay.
So we used to hang out on, you know, the whole sitcom
right,
setup.
Right, gotcha.
Roof, the two white people, but they got black friends, and I'm the black friend, all that shit. And then, Jane Lynch was the boss of the guy.
Okay.
So she killed, but like her whole thing, but they didn't like, and then me as the dumb boyfriend of the black doctor chick, they liked me.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, all right. So instead of dumb boyfriend, this is what Max Muchnick said. He said, instead of playing a black dumb boyfriend, we're going to make you the boss of Jack. And you get to be the dude that runs the rec center, and you got to deal with Jack's antics. I was like, this is fucking crazy. Okay. Because people back home was like, nigga, you a superhero.
Right.
You might, what? You a straight black man on a show, and you the boss of a white person? Get the fuck out of here. Like, motherfuckers was like, yeah, you did it, bro. So I was like, all right, this is one way to look at it. So, yeah, that all came from just doing that one read that my manager told me.
That you didn't want to do.
That I didn't want to do. So, yeah, it was like, wow.
So, at that point, like, you really just like, I don't want to do acting. You didn't want to do acting.
I really want to do stand-up, but my agent's just all up my ass always. So, you know how to act? Because I came from unscripted, broke-ass game show on MTV.
Right.
I used to have a show on MTV called Broke-Ass Game Show. I did two seasons, then Viacom pulled it. So, I got into acting, but I didn't really think it was going to be huge. I just knew that scripted shit was, you get more money.
Okay.
But then when I started auditioning, he's like, you really know how to act? And I'm like, ah, fuck out of here. And then, Reed, come on, man, you can do it. And then I started, I was like, all right, whatever. If this will get me fans to come to the shows,
well,
then
that's
I'll do
the
it.
Thing. That's why your managers are on you about it, because it's like that makes you so much more marketable for stand-up as a television credit.
And I couldn't see the bigger picture for some goofy-ass reason. So when I finally stopped being stubborn,
Let me ask you this question. Like, now that you're doing it, do you like it? I mean, do you like acting?
I kind of do. I go, well, shit. I've been in, I got a movie coming out next year with Pete Davidson.
So, there you go.
What's it called?
It's called Staten Island.
Okay.
And it's basically Pete's life if he didn't do stand-up.
I read something about
Apatow's directed
that.
It's a pretty funky thing.
I think I saw that in Variety or something yesterday.
Yeah, man. And so Pete gave me a role, and I really tried to, you know, I really dedicated myself to it. I was like, all right, just take it serious, bro. Because it's a comedy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you get to act funny. So you just do your thing. And then it wound up being...
So you filmed it already?
We filmed it in the summer. It comes out Father's Day next year.
No, you came here and you performed with Pete. That's how I first introduced you to the club.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, man, like I said before, we started this off with positive reviews.
Yeah.
All I heard about after those Pete Davidson shows, I was out of town. All I heard about was how good you were.
Yeah, man. Sometimes you find a pocket. Sometimes you get in that pocket, and Rochester had the pocket that night. I don't know what it was, but I came out to some Wu-Tang shit, and everybody just kind of gravitated to it. So when I started talking, like, everybody was just going wild. And I was like, all right, man, whatever. It's only 20 minutes. Give him a machine gun. I was like, let me just go. If it's 20 minutes, let me just do all burners back to back. That was my whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just do every big joke you got since they laughing like this. And it kind of, every time I said something, it just kept going up and up and up. And then that's why I'm back now.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love it.
I think that's the attitude that I think more guys should have as features.
I don't see
a lot of people think like, oh, I got to be catered to the headliner.
You know, we've talked about this a lot.
Okay. Yeah.
We've talked a lot about this on the show before. I want to know your thoughts on this, but I just want to throw in a little preface here. We are of the theory that a lot of headliners will bring in will bring a feature act with them that they know will not outshine them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's big.
Mm-hmm.
But Pete never saw it like that. Pete was like, this is how I see it. I'm going up against fame.
Mm-hmm.
Pete has fame. I don't have fame. I just got this little bit of talent that I got, right? Mm-hmm. So if Pete goes, well, this is my audience. It's huge. It's packed out. Why not kill?
Yeah.
Tie fire to the stage because they're going to fuck with me either way. And I'm like, that does make sense because he's famous. They came here to see him. So why not show up? Because he's already this SNL guy. He's already kind of his track record is prestigious.
Oh, yeah.
So why not have a really good feature? Like, 100%. Why have some corny motherfucker on the road when this dude is on SNL? Nah. So I go, he knew. Well, Derek kills. That's what he told me. He was like, I'm bringing you with me because you kill.
Yeah.
And I want you to kill. So I'm like, oh, okay.
And that's the part of it that I've never understood is why people don't have that mindset more often. And I assume it's got to be some type of
comic insecurity. Motherfuckers don't want to work. I don't have a problem working. I tell anybody that opens up for me, tie fire to that shit.
Yeah.
To see if I'm actually good or not.
Yep.
So I'm like, all right, I'll do it. So I like the good feature. I like the guy that's out there eating, trying to eat lunch. And it cracks me up sometimes because the guy will go out, try to eat my lunch, and then I go, you did well. And then I go out there and just shut it down. But it's like, he set a standard.
Yeah.
Right.
So I'm like, all right, I got to jump off this standard.
Yep.
So instead of trying to bring it down. But I know comics that bring the shitty openers because I get this a lot. You're really funny for a feature. I've never seen a feature do so good.
I believe the classic line is, and you were funny too.
You were funny too.
Yeah.
Oh my God. You know, so I'm sitting there like, that must be a thing. Motherfuckers bring these mooks on stage that don't want to captivate a full-ass crowd. I like big crowds because I want to see if I can get them all to pay attention. Can I get the back? Can I get the sides? Can I get the motherfuckers that's paying their bill? Can I get them to not look at their bill and listen to what the fuck I'm saying real quick?
Yeah.
That's the beauty of this. Like, it's snappy comedy because where I came from, Philly was tough. You get on stage, they almost boo you before you start talking. Or they go, this nigga, what you got to say, bro? Hmm? Let me hear it. Let me see what you got. I paid $5. You better be Chris Rock. Like, what the fuck? But whatever. All right, whatever. I'll accept the challenge. So that's what it was.
Well,
so I'm glad that it all worked out.
Let me ask you this question. You obviously have a pretty good grasp as to what's going on in the business right now. You're just on the ascent, my friend. You're
That's what they tell me.
Yeah, well, it's pretty evident.
Yeah.
But if you had to start from scratch, man, if you had to, like, just turn off where you are right now, let's pretend none of it ever happened, and okay. you decided comedy was for you,
mm-hmm.
where are you starting? Like, knowing what you know now, where would you start?
I would start in Philly.
Okay.
Because what I've noticed when new comics start in New York or L.A.,
mm-hmm.
you only telling jokes to other comics.
Yeah.
So, and most comics are fucking, you know, insecure and competitive. So mm-hmm. they watch your shit. You know,
yeah.
they'll be like, that was a good joke. But if it's better than they joke, watch out.
Yep.
I'd rather start in a place where I have no friends. There's not that many comics there. There's only other comics trying to perform in front of real people
mm-hmm.
that will boo you if you're not funny. So I start in a city that actually has a crowd. Because in New York, you can just do bars. They got open mics all over the place in New York. They actually got a database that you can look up
yep.
and see where yeah. all of the paid shows is at or the spot shows at. And then you get there, and it's just comedy school. You just performing in front of a bunch of other motherfuckers that's trying to tell jokes. And that turns into a speakeasy or AA or some class. With, it's like therapy. There's a bunch of motherfuckers. It's, yeah. the blind leading the blind. You don't know therapy, if you're funny yep. or not. Because you're just yeah. surrounded by a bunch of motherfuckers chasing the same thing. But if you were in a group of people that don't know you, are mad that they paid, mm-hmm. and then you got to get on stage with that attitude, you got to face that attitude, and mm-hmm. if you can cut through the attitude and be funny in that, you're going to make it.
Yeah.
So if I had to start over, I'd start in a tough city. Shit, I'd start in Detroit. and then try to get up and try to work my way back up.
Okay.
I hate to say this, but it's better to start black.
Okay.
Because they're the most honest crowd.
That's where I fucked up.
Technically, I would blame that on your parents.
Start black and finish black. I'm not just saying use black people to get strong and then yeah, fuck yeah. them. Nah.
No.
Maintain yeah, yeah. a black vote. This is for anybody that want to do comedy. Maintain an honest opinion from somebody.
Yeah.
Nigga, you corny. I've heard that. Nigga, you ain't black funny. Oh, I've heard that. They just didn't get it. All right, so how can I make them get it? Don't run from it. Run to it. So, like, so if I had to start over, it'd be in a hood or tough area to make people laugh.
Okay.
Because that's where I started the first time.
Don't run from it. Run to it.
Yeah.
That's some solid advice, actually. Yeah. In a lot of ways, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of people are afraid to fail.
Yeah.
But in comedy,
you got to fail in order to be a good comedian. Yeah.
Exactly correct. You have to fail.
You got to fail. And this, to find your success, you have to bomb. Because you don't learn from doing good. You only learn from doing bad in this game. Because what did I say to get tomatoes and pennies thrown at me? Shit, I can't say that no more.
Yeah.
Or I didn't gauge the audience correctly in order to, like, I told a Michael Jackson joke in front of a bunch of, you know, pedophile survivors. Like, you can't do no shit like that. You got to yeah. figure out the balance. Know your gauge. Like, you know what helped me a lot? Casino shows.
Okay.
Because mm-hmm. casino shows have old Silver Fox white people that have an old school style of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, more or less racist. But not even that. They just knew what segregation was. They
yeah,
knew
they
what
remember
the two
it.
Water
yeah.
fountains were. So I'm this new black guy that got to kind of make these guys laugh. How the fuck do I do that? Okay, observe. Walk around a casino. See what these motherfuckers are doing. Okay, they smoke. They play slots. And old white dudes love pastrami sandwiches. So make a pastrami sandwich joke.
I don't hate a pastrami sandwich.
And I used
sandwich.
To do that. I'm like, I used to make a joke. We go, I know how to warm up to y'all old racist white guys. And they go, and I go, yeah, man. Let's split a pastrami sandwich after the show. They fucking lose it. I'm like, I don't know what sauerkraut and rye bread and red meat do, but y'all are so much happier with a cup of coffee and a half of a pastrami sandwich. Why don't we just talk? And then we go, oh, this black guy's different. He kind of took the time to understand. Even though I'm not saying I put my ass out and tried to soften up to a racist. Nah, I figured out y'all language.
Mm-hmm.
I see what mm-hmm. the fuck y'all doing out here. I see that y'all took all these losses. Now you come to the comedy club because you ain't got no more money. So now I can tease you.
Mm-hmm.
And you know it's right. I saw you. I've been walking around the casino seeing y'all lose. I've been seeing y'all live. So all right, okay. So if I go, I see how y'all move around. And if you address it and then make something funny out of it, they'll loosen up.
I've always been of the mind whenever especially when I was starting out, whenever I worked in a new room, is to always just be a student of what's going on.
Absolutely.
It's one of the best things you could ever do. If you could learn how to write a joke on the fly about what's going on, it's smooth
and
sailing.
And that's tough, but to get to that premise bridge punchline shit, that's the algorithm. 1, 2, 3. If you can figure out, there's the premise, I need a funky idea to get to this punchline, got you. And if you go with that algorithm, the more you do it, I'm not saying that you're good automatic. I've been doing comedy 16 years now, and I just got good.
Yeah.
So that algorithm plus being able to observe your surroundings, for real, that'll probably help you out.
2 years in,
mm-hmm.
How good did you think you were?
2 years in, I thought I was kind of cocky. Mm-hmm. Kind of cocky 2 years because I was getting the good spots at the open mic.
Okay.
Like I was going up like in the middle. I wasn't at the end no more.
Host was hooking you up, giving
host
you some
was
good
hooking
spots.
Me up. The host was talking to me afterward, and then I think it's my second year. My first year, I auditioned for some BET show, bombed, but still was able to get to that. Mm-hmm. You know, I tried to become a local celebrity,
mm-hmm.
and it worked out. And then after 5 years, I moved to New York, and then got hit off my horse again.
Yeah,
yeah. So. 2 years in, I was kind of cocky. People told me, you shouldn't be that cocky because you're not that funny.
Were they right?
And they were right. And I was
yeah.
like, damn. I was just a ball of energy. I was just up there falling and making noise. I really wasn't saying shit. The content wasn't there, but the act out was.
But don't you need that?
You
don't
do.
Don't you need that?
That's but you like need a, content.
Sure. But,
yeah.
but a lot of people can write really good jokes but not deliver them.
Absolutely.
And some people could deliver a joke,
there's
but they can't write it.
There's gym teachers and there's athletes, mm-hmm. right?
There it is.
So I wanted to be an athlete. But I was doing gym teacher jokes, acting like an athlete. So I was like, they was like, you need to get out in the field a little bit more because you're not, you mean your energy's there, but people don't understand what the fuck you're saying. They don't even like I was 19 when I started.
Yeah.
Trying to talk to mm-hmm. a bunch of adults that have been through shit. So at 19, I'm up there. You ever take a shit and do your homework? And they're like, what? Man, go
I don't
ahead,
know.
Live your life.
25 years ago, maybe. I don't
yeah,
know.
I'm like, yeah, but. Yeah, but come out of class or whatever the fuck I was saying. I didn't really have too much. I'm 19 plus. I was spoiled, little spoiled kid living in the suburbs, trying to do city jokes in the big city. Of course, I had to come around. I got smacked off my horse quite a few times.
Yeah.
And then, when I started understanding, hanging around the funny guys, I started
yeah.
hanging around only funny guys. I was like, oh, I see how this go.
Yeah.
I see the swag. I see. Oh, that was a well written out joke. Whap 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 whap. Okay. And then I was like, all right.
There's a lot. There's so much. There's always more to learn.
Always
right?
more to learn.
Always more to learn.
Even now, I watch people and go, like Dave Chappelle, Sticks and Stones, he ran a clinic on motherfuckers. That was a clinic.
That
Bill Burr's Paper Tiger mm-hmm. clinic. I was like, they got clinics. They running a Wanda Sykes clinics.
Yeah, her new special's really good, too. I was
clinics.
Listening to some of it on
like,
Netflix Radio.
I'm like, they out here running clinics on people. When I saw Dave Chappelle do that Def Jam 25, and he went up there half drunk and just killed him. I'm like, over all those other comics in the room, he stood out and just trashed everybody. I was like, there's always something else to learn. There's always another hour I can learn. There's always another way to write. There's through lines. There's. What does this set mean to you? And I hang around fucking comedy Nazis. So these motherfuckers, they dog stand up until it's good. They shit
yeah.
on it until it's good. Okay, it's good. So you
yeah, I love them.
Yeah.
Those are my people.
Yeah.
You shit on
big
it until
writers,
it's good.
Like, I'm friends with all these head writers of big shows and shit, so you got to know, like, when you hang out, even when you hang out, your language better be funny.
Awesome.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Now, before you go, can I get all of their names and phone numbers?
I drop names, but I won't
okay,
say.
Okay.
Shout out to Monroe Martin. Shout out to Dave Temple. Shout out to Michael Che. Shout out to Pete Davidson.
I'll just take Michael Che's number. I got the high side. I got to let you go. But there are four more shows here at Comedy the Carlson this weekend with Derek Gaines. You would be a fool to miss them.
It's going
to
be good.
Get your tickets now, 5854-COMEDY, or visit carlsoncomedy.com. There is no news segment this week because Ross is doing a nerd thing like we told you.
Yes.
So we'll be back next week. We look forward to seeing you. And Derek Gaines, go kill him this weekend. We're looking forward to it.
Thank you all.
Thanks
all
for
right.
coming out.
We'll
really appreciate it.
Don't forget, rate and review. We'll see you next time. Thank you. Good night.